This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History is now streaming on Hulu.
Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is the latest entry in the blockbuster action comedy franchise about hunting and trapping evil spirits while wisecracking. This time, the crew has set up shop in New York and, with the help of the surviving OG Ghostbusters, tries to stop a demon looking to freeze the world and rule over it. I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're talking about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
I'm Jesse Thorne. Why did Cola Scola write a bonkers, extremely fictionalized play about Mary Todd Lincoln?
Well, you know, it was 2020 and we were all so isolated. I just started doing research. But the truth is, I just thought of it.
We'll talk about that and more on Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Okay, close your eyes for a second. Now imagine you're on your dream vacation. No work calls to answer, no text messages to respond to, just your suitcase and an opportunity.
The opportunity to just take yourself out of your routine and travel deeper.
How to actually take that dream trip. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR.
Moms know the ups and downs of life. It's what makes them great subjects for books.
This is one of the things that fiction can do, right? It can give us a window into the battles that each person is waging or facing, but it doesn't mean that we condone her actions.
This week on NPR's Book of the Day podcast, we are discussing books centering mothers. So call your mom, then tune into the Book of the Day podcast from NPR.
On It's Been a Minute, we're keeping you in the know when it comes to culture. I break down the latest trends and the forces behind them and introduce you to the creatives who think deeply about how we live today. Come for some good old cultural analysis and have a few laughs with me. Listen to the It's Been a Minute podcast from NPR.
Joining me today is the host of WBEZ's Nerdette podcast, which recently celebrated its 10th anniversary, Greta Johnson. Hey, Greta, welcome back.
Hey, Glenn, glad to be here.
Great to have you. Also with us is Ronald Young Jr. He is the host of the film and television review podcast, Leaving the Theater, and the podcast, Wait For It, WEIGHT. Hi, Ronald.
Hello, Glenn. I'm happy to be here.
Happy to have you. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is the follow-up to 2021's Ghostbusters Afterlife, and it catches us up with the family introduced in that movie and relocates them to the familiar Tribeca Firehouse, out of which the original Ghostbusters operated back in the day. There's the kids, Brainy Phoebe, played by McKenna Grace, Whiny Trevor, played by Finn Wolfhard. They're the grandkids of Egon Spengler, played in the original movies by the late Harold Ramis. And there's the adults, jaded mom Callie, played by Carrie Coon, and the very Paul Rudd-like Gary, played by, let me check my notes, Paul Rudd. Hovering at the edges of the film are most of the OG cast, including Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts, and briefly, Bill Murray. New to the mix, Kumail Nanjiani plays Nadim, an opportunistic slacker who has come into possession of an artifact that may unleash a frozen empire, frankly, that threatens the existence of life on Earth. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is in theaters now. Greta, starting with you, how did busting make you feel? Good, bad, and different?
Oh, my God. It made me feel great. I really liked it. I mean, I have my qualms about it. I'm sure we'll get into it. But mm-hmm. I think especially when you think about it as a continuation of a revered series, they're doing some really interesting stuff. So I'm super excited to talk with y'all about it today.
All right, let's get into it. Ronald, how about you?
I really liked it. I thought it was so funny. It was exactly what I expected. It gave me much of the nostalgia as well as, you know, the technology upgrades of the 2024s, if you want to call it that. They gave a textbook example of how you should continue a story, how you should do a reboot, which I'd love to talk more with y'all about.
Well, let's talk about it, because when we reviewed Afterlife on this show, there were four of us, and we all found slightly different ways to say, this is fine, but why? Mm. And I think we can tackle the why and dismiss it, right? Because, yes, this movie is wildly unnecessary, but that battle has been lost. I mean, it is a truth universally acknowledged that Hollywood abhors an unexploited IP. They hate to leave money on the table. There's a title card at the beginning of this movie that was also on Afterlife that I didn't clock at the time, but it's Ghost Core, C-O-R. RPS.
Yeah.
That is the production company formed exclusively to build a Ghostbusters cinematic universe. capitalism gonna capitalize. We can't fight the wave. Let's ride it. I thought this is probably the best version of what this is. This is brand extension. It's got real jokes. It's got solid practical effects. The pacing's a lot better than Afterlife was because it doesn't have to spend an hour setting up a passel of new characters in kind of a schmaltzy way. There is some schmaltz in this movie, but not as much. We'll get to it. And it does more than just wallow in nostalgia as Afterlife did because there's a new threat. And it's not haunted by the literal CGI ghost of Harold Ramis, which was supposed to send you out of Afterlife with the warm glow of nostalgia, just made me want to shower. It made me feel unclean. But talk to me about the fuel mixture here, okay? So new busters to OG busters, new story beats to fan service elements. This attempts to introduce new elements, but the setting is that firehouse. So is that the film fighting itself, or is that just this franchise finding its groove? Does a Ghostbusters film need to be set in Lower Manhattan, Greta, for it to work?
You know, Glenn, oh my gosh, I have so many things I want to say. I really liked Afterlife.
Okay.
Me too.
I thought like the aesthetic of the Oklahoma of it all was really interesting. I also thought that they updated the story in some really interesting ways. Phoebe, God bless her, drove me nuts in this newest movie. She was still slightly annoying in Afterlife, but I think the idea of framing a teenage girl as the center of the story, especially one who's such a science nerd, is really exciting, especially for the science nerds. Mm-hmm. Afterlife, I saw in 2022 when I had COVID. I was stuck in Canada, sick. Mm-hmm. And so we watched like all the hotel movies that were on offering, and Afterlife was one of them. And it was probably the most fun of the movies that we saw that week. And so it has like a very special place in my heart and always will. I was kind of worried, like I thought Afterlife was good enough and paid good enough homage to Ghostbusters that I was like, do we need more of this? Mm-hmm. Like, so I was pretty pleasantly surprised, especially with the return to New York, that like they were still able to maintain a pretty clean, like vintage isn't quite the word, but like the aesthetic worked pretty well for me with New York too.
Sure.
I'm curious what you thought, Ronald, given the fact that you also liked Afterlife.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked Afterlife. I was surprised that I got emotional towards the end of the movie, and you probably know exactly what scene I'm talking about.
Same.
Glenn, I know they made it in a factory. I know they did. I know they did it just to make me cry, and it worked. It doesn't always work. Sometimes I see it coming. This one, as soon as I saw the hand touch the ectopack or the I was like, you got me. But in this one, I think, like, for me, all of the elements that I like about this is what I think they should be doing when they mine IP. It's like the most recent Jurassic World Dominion, where you see that blending of the old cast and the new cast. You get your Sam Neills, you get your Laura Derns, you get your Jeff Goldblums. It's bring me the old characters, pair them with the new characters, use the elders as sages to guide the vision to the future, and then pass it off at some point. You know what I mean? That way you have a new audience that's watching these characters. You have the old characters that are in the ether, and we could still use them to kind of inform the story we're telling now. And I think all of that, doing it under the guise of this new threat that was coming, is very well done. The one thing that I will say that the story needs is higher stakes, because I think the idea of there being real danger and people actually being in mortal danger is important, because when you get to kind of the climax of this movie, there are like 12 people with proton packs like ready to fight. And I'm like, we got to call the herd here. It can't be that many. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so if we keep going with new movies, we can't just have 12 people show up with proton packs every time. It draws your attention away. And I think that was probably the only drawback of the movie, is that it seemed like there was a lot of subplots that I felt were kind of unnecessary, including the one that starred McKenna Grace as Phoebe, which y'all kind of alluded to. It was very irritating.
That was very irritating.
I thought McKenna Grace was one of the standouts of Afterlife. Yes, I agree. I was looking forward to what this film would do with her. She gets kind of saddled with this tragic, very big Hollywood crypto queer, hesitantly queer, tentatively queer storyline that really bogs down the center of the film. Talk to me more about it, Greta.
Oh my God. I mean, a Ghostbuster kind of, maybe, I guess, sort of falls in love with a ghost.
Yeah.
Which is...
how poetic.
It didn't work at all. It also, like, I mean, this ghost ends up being, like, a huge part of the plot in terms of, you know, the coming Armageddon, et cetera, et cetera. And I just didn't think any of it worked at all. I am happy for Phoebe. If she comes out as like whatever, that's fabulous. But like the way it just did not work for me at all.
And there was a way in Afterlife that they centered Phoebe that worked for me in terms of being an outcast.
Yeah.
And the way that they kind of style her after her grandfather, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. She was baby Harold. It was adorable.
Yes. But this movie opens with them saying now she is too young to be a Ghostbuster, which for me as an audience member, I'm like, throw that plot away.
Exactly.
We know she's going to be busting ghosts by the end of this movie.
She's going to save the day.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, we don't even need any of that stuff that y'all are doing. If anything, I think they sort of set her off on a mission to find out what brass does instead of kind of fast tracking it for like true. 2 minutes and one portion of the movie.
Yeah.
So I feel like this whole little subplot that they had, it just didn't make much sense. And it felt like they were still trying to center Phoebe in a significant way, which I'm not opposed to, but just do it better.
Yeah.
Right. Any other standouts cast-wise? Let's talk about the Kumail Nanjiani of it all. Now, look, I sort of know Kumail. He's been a guest on this podcast. I've met him several times. Mm. I want to say just empirically that every line out of that guy's mouth got killed with the audience that Ronald and I saw it with. Would you agree, Ronald?
Yes.
Yeah. Friendly audience, but man.
Yes. You know what's funny is, like, I love Kumail Nanjiani, and I want to see him do more things, but I got to be honest, when he's doing this,
yeah.
which is just like cracking jokes and being a smart aleck, it's just, I enjoy him. It scratches a very particular itch for me, and he just was at home in this. They wrote a lot of lines that just really landed for him.
I loved it. I thought he was delightful. I thought the whole supporting cast, honestly, like the first couple minutes of this movie I was, with the family dynamic stuff, I was like, oh, this might not quite work. I mean, I leaned over to my boyfriend who came with me and I was like, Paul Rudd is carrying this whole thing.
He was.
And he ended up saying, like, yes, Paul Rudd is the bacon of acting.
Yes.
Like, turns out all you ever need is Paul Rudd and it makes it better.
I have a ghost to bust.
All right, that was cool.
Gary, come on.
No, I know, I'm sorry. It's just the way she said it. It sounded cool.
But then, like, Kumail was great. James Acaster was phenomenal our other, like, ghost-busting nerd. Patton Oswalt showing up as our librarian guy. Like, it was really fun to see all of them.
Yeah.
I thought it was a real pleasure. And it's interesting, too, because, like, there is certainly the argument that, like, I think we had too many characters. But I think, honestly, that more was that they tried to do too much with the subplots that didn't quite work, whereas, like, the cast itself, I thought, was phenomenal. I mean, I think another instance of the weird subplots is Finn Wolfhard, who it's hard to even remember what that character's name is because he...
It's Trevor.
Trevor. Yeah. I mean, what was Trevor doing?
Yeah.
I mean, he's fighting with Slimer, which, like, you're right. I wasn't very interested in that subplot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think I mentioned to y'all before we started recording was that podcast, Logan Kim as podcast. Give me more podcast. I want more of that character more than I wanted Finn Wolfhard as Trevor. And to be clear, I like Finn Wolfhard, the actor.
Same.
It just felt like Trevor in the film, he did not have much to do. No.
Yeah.
There's a joke even that he makes in the middle of the movie about being the second child that is actually funny, but also felt very kind of like meta considering what he's doing in the film.
Yeah. I mean, this kid, Logan Kim, who plays podcast, this kid's a natural. There is not an ounce of kid actor energy. He's just got the chops.
He is also a man now, to be clear.
Sure.
He has grown up since Afterlife. I was like, that's Logan Kim.
Yep. And I got to be honest, I was so happily surprised by Paul Rudd in this film. I shouldn't be. But after Quantumania, I started to worry that maybe the Paul Rudd of it all was losing its ruddiness. But there is a bit in this film involving a very familiar song lyric that is such a quintessential Paul Rudd bit that could only work coming out of that guy's face.
Oh, my God. Also, when he introduces himself as the children's step teacher.
Yeah.
It's perfect. It's
solid,
perfect.
Solid. All right. So let me ask you, the ghost core of it all. Are you happy to stick with this new cast and let this be the send-off to the old cast and kind of send them off to live off their residuals? Or does a Ghostbusters movie need some of that old blood to work? What do you guys think? Ronald, start with you.
I think that, like, again, this is how I want reboots to be done. I want them to have, you know, threads of the old, but really focused on the new.
Mm-hmm.
Cobra Kai is a perfect example of this. You take the elders, you put them in positions that are kind of important.
Sure.
Anyone could play those roles, but that they're played by elders draws in a certain crowd. But then what we're focused on is what's happening with the new generation. So No, we don't necessarily need the old Ghostbusters anymore, but just to know that they're around and available, I think is helpful with the future of the franchise. Now, with the ghost core of it all, I don't know how many spinoffs I want to see. Yeah. I got to be honest with you. Like, I want to see main canon. I don't know how many spinoffs I want to see. I don't know. What do you think, Greta?
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, I do think, like, one hesitation I had, especially with the second one in the series so far, is that it did start to feel pretty Marvel-y in terms of, you know, the Armageddon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I don't know how I feel about that part. Will I watch a third movie in this series? Absolutely. But yeah, beyond that, I'm not sure how much more I really need. What do you think, Glenn?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is the thing. I don't know how much more they can milk out of this OG cast.
Right.
I just don't know how many more stories there are to tell with them. This felt in a way like a send-off to me, a perfectly satisfying send-off, if that turns out to be.
Yeah.
What I like about the new cast is that they are growing. They're kids, and they're going to develop as actors. They're going to develop as characters, theoretically. There's there. And as we keep introducing new threats and we don't keep doubling down, if I never see another Stay Puft Marshmallow Man or Gozer again, I'll be fine. Mm-hmm.
There was a lot.
In terms of the future of this franchise, let me hit you with this. Ghostbusters is a Sony IP set in New York City. Spider-Man is Sony IP.
Oh, boy.
Set in New York City.
Uh-oh.
So maybe instead of milking the Spider-Verse dry with your Morbiuses and your Madam's Web, maybe we cross the streams. What do you think? What do you think?
Then if you do that, then like de facto, they're in the MCU somehow too?
Yeah. That's the thing. I can't do it. I can't do it.
No, it's too much. The center of gravity.
I want them to at least maintain that level of purity. I will also say, like, I will happily watch Dan Aykroyd do whatever he wants. Same with Bill Murray.
Yeah, sure. I think there's like a USA styled show with Dan Aykroyd at the center that just reminds me of Warehouse 13 that they could easily be making, where he's going around doing low-key ghostbusting with podcasts.
I think it's also so sweet that it's like, those dudes obviously don't have to work.
No, anymore, sure.
You know? So the fact that they're showing up for it, I think is really sweet.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we want to know what you think about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. Greta Ronald, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Bustin' makes me feel good, Glenn.
I knew it did. We want to take a moment to thank our Pop Culture Happy Hour Plus subscribers. We appreciate you so much for showing your support of NPR. If you haven't signed up yet and you want to show your support and listen to this show without a single solitary sponsor break, head over to plus.npr.org/happyhour or visit the link in our show notes. This episode was produced by Hafsa Fathima and Liz Metzger and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Glenn Weldon, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from Capital One, offering commercial solutions you can bank on. Your business faces specific challenges and unique opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services, custom tailored to your short and long-term goals. Backed by the expertise, strategy, and resources of a top 10 commercial bank, a dedicated team works with you to support your success and help achieve your goals. Explore the possibilities at CapitalOne.com/commercial.
On this week's Wild Card, we talk with Issa Rae about those moments where our lives could have gone another direction.
Definitely wasn't supposed to be with that guy at all. But I still think about it.
I'm Rachel Martin. Issa Rae tells us how to make peace with the path not taken. That's on the Wild Card podcast from NPR, the game where cards control the conversation.
Why is everyone so obsessed with traditional wives or trad wives on social media? This week, we're talking about the viral videos of women making marshmallows and mozzarella from scratch, and how behind the sheen of calm kitchens and cute fits, there's some interesting pessimism about our modern world. And that's worth digging into. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.